For a business with a global outlook like book publishing, Book Expo America is full of ironies. Print has regained some of its lost luster recently, while educational programming remains focused on the digital. And though China has a prominent presence as this year's guest of honor, BEA is every bit a New York, New York production. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book, reporting today from New York's Javits Center and the site of Book Expo America 2015. Joining me, as he does every Friday, is Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese. Good to see you, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So we have BEA just about wrapping up, and I guess it's time for some assessment. How do things look to you so far?
Well, I thought our Day 2 show daily headlines summed it up pretty well. Promising, maybe a little weird. And weird because of the schedule change. The show this year began on a Wednesday, as we've talked about on this show before, and the show floor didn't actually open until the afternoon. So you wound up with sort of a line outside the exhibit hall waiting to get in. But I have to say, it's been a really strong show this year. The opening conversation with Jonathan Franzen, he talked about his new book, Purity, but that was a little awkward, and he gave me the vibe that he wanted to be anywhere but on that stage, but that's not unlike him, I think, generally in interviews. I had a great day at the IDPF, including the panel that I was involved on, which talked about, is Amazon good for the reader? And it was nice to actually be in an Amazon discussion where they didn't have to put bags over our heads or disguise our voices. We actually got to talk about the subject pretty candidly. The booksellers we spoke to have been quite enthusiastic. The show floor has seemed busy today and yesterday as well. And the librarians that I've spoken to in the library lounge were happy as well. So in a year of change, I expected more issues and complaints, frankly, but I think this has overall been a very good show. And I'll take this opportunity to note that you can read all of our show daily coverage on the PW website for free. And I'm curious to know your impressions, too. How's the show gone for you so far?
Well, I was part of a panel on copyright content and global commerce. And I guess what would be surprising to anyone who visited that particular panel was, you know, who's in, who's out, and who's on the blacklist, who's on the whitelist. It turns out that these days, given some of the rewriting of the copyright law, Canada rates as a country to watch when it comes to IP violations as perceived, at least by publishers. And we heard a lot from the Chinese publishers attending Global Market Forum that they have a concern about copyright, which really does sort of stand things on its head. So again, as I say in the intro, I think there are a lot of ironies and contradictions here, and they'll be sorted out in the weeks ahead. So from the show dailies, I learned that you had a panel on subscription, something else that may stand the business on its head. What did you learn there?
Yeah, subscription ebook services have certainly been a buzzworthy topic in recent years. I think we spoke about them at Digital Book World, after Digital Book World in January on this podcast. And I did. I went to a great panel that was moderated by Smashwords founder Mark Coker. And, you know, I talked a little bit about subscriptions in my Amazon panel, too, because the more I learn, the more I am eager to see ebook subscriptions really work. For one thing, because in the age of tablets and phones, I think they make sense. I think they work the way other content works, whether it's Netflix or Spotify. And I thought Scribd's Andrew Weinstein, who's their director of content acquisition, was particularly persuasive. You know, under Scribd's subscription model, subscribers can browse and read all the books they want at will. But when they hit a certain point in each book, the publisher ends up getting paid their full retail share. Now, that's different from other subscriptions, which offer a piece of a revenue share, particularly Amazon, which offers a revenue share. But I think the question is, and what was brought up on this panel, is whether or not publishers believe that that is going to be sustainable. And so far, I think it is. And that's because most users are reading less than two books a month so far who are using the service. Now, some are reading more, but for now it works. And Weinstein made a good point for those who think that this might be too good to last forever. Well, everything is too good to last forever, he said. You know, ask publishers today if they're being paid the same amount from their retailers as they were 5 years ago. I thought that was a pretty interesting point. Personally, I think ebooks are suited ideally for subscriptions based on what I call the Olive Garden principle. We may have talked about this before. You know, the Olive Garden has this all-you-can-eat pasta special they offer. But seriously, how many bowls of Alfredo can one person really put down, you know? So on some, you're going to lose, for sure. They can put down a lot. But most people don't. Most people are not going to eat up to the price point that you offer. And I think that's really true with books because it takes time to get through books. So on a monthly subscription, it makes more sense to do it with books than it does for, say, music, which you consume rather quickly. One of the panelists was named Justo Hidalgo. He works for a company called 24 Symbols in Europe. And they were looking at their data that showed that their subscribers were reading about 1.2 to 1.5 books a month. And that's a figure that Scribd's Andrew Weinstein also noted, 1.2 to 1.5 books a month. But there was one lady in northern Spain who was reading 48 books a month. They thought it must have been, you know, an anathema. Something was wrong with the data. But they found her. Turns out she was reading 48 books a month. It's a little old woman in northern Spain who was reading romance novels. So you know what they did? They hired her. And she's now an ambassador for the service.
That's a great story. And, you know, I have to say that the subscription model does something to solve the discovery problem, because people can go and check out a lot of different books that they would otherwise resist looking into. And if publishers and authors are going to complain that nobody knows their books are out there, if exposing them to these books through these kinds of services addresses that problem, then I guess we kind of have to be for it.
Absolutely. One of the panelists made the comment, and I agree with this, it takes away buyer's remorse. You know, you could read and read and read without having to hit the buy button. And that really, I think, is going to expose a lot of new authors and new titles.
And hopefully we'll help them sell books down the line that people will want to read all the way through. So ebooks continue to be a source of discussion, and you were on a library ebook panel. And there's some new twists in that particular story. And librarians continue to be concerned about the way they are going to get ebooks from publishers and the way they're going to distribute them to their customers.
Yeah, library ebooks is still a very, very hot issue, and it was at this show this year as well. But change appears to be coming. You know, there's a growing movement to move towards more experimental models with ebooks and libraries. And certainly that's what we talked about on my panel and also on another panel that I went to. You know, two comments from the panel that I went to really jumped out at me. And the one was from Boston Public Library's Michael Colford, who said that he really wanted something integrated for library patrons. What he doesn't want is another library platform. And he said that while he was happy to buy ebooks from anyone, once you hit the discoverability or the availability or holds management or checkout, the bookshelf, the reading experience, he wanted that to be all one thing. And I think that's a really important point. But it was BiblioBoard's Andrew Roskill who really stole the show for me, because I think he hit the nail on the head. You know, librarians don't like to disappoint people, Roskill said. The result is that in order to meet demand, they end up licensing more copies of popular ebooks that are priced at 5 to 15 times the retail price. And eventually, they have to relicense those books. And that is simply an unsustainable model from a budget perspective, but also an ineffective strategy because it only serves your hardcore library users rather than appealing to and bringing in new library users. And in a moment of frankness, he blamed the confusion in libraries and the troubles with ebooks on inertia among the publishers. You know, libraries as a sale, as a percentage of total revenues, is not that big. So the big five publishers simply don't have that much incentive to stick their necks out and try something different, he said. And it seems like after 4 or 5 years, we're still talking about library ebooks as if they're some beta project. I thought that was a great observation. But he noticed the rest of the world is moving on, that they're trying new things and accessing content differently. And frankly, he said it's time for libraries and publishers to do something different too.
Well, you know, it's time for authors to think differently as well. They're part of this discussion. We've heard from the librarians and from the publishers, and we've also heard from the Authors Guild. They have a small presence here at the BEA, and they've just announced that they're going to take a new look at contracts.
Yes, welcome Authors Guild to the conversation here. You know, out of the courtroom, no longer suing Google, they've decided that they are rolling out their new, what they call their Fair Contract Initiative, which is a series of commentaries that they're going to be publishing in the coming months to take a what they say is a fresh look at the standard book publishing contract. This is something I think they should have been focusing on all along rather than some other things, personally speaking. But, you know, I'm interested to see what the Authors Guild will have to say about how the how to rebalance the book contract in the digital age. But at this point, I'll limit my commentary to good to have you on board, Authors Guild.
Welcome, everybody. And Apple is often a part of this podcast. And even though we've been away from the courtroom, you have been at least here at the Javits Center. There's been news out of the courtroom and not good for Apple.
So far, not good for Apple. Once again, they find themselves on the losing end of a decision. Now, this is not the main appeal, but they did lose their appeal challenging the monitorship of Michael Bromwich. And what's interesting about this appeal is that Apple has been sort of whining about their monitorship from the beginning, and they've been creating all sorts of drama around this. But the court unanimously upheld Judge Denise Coates' appointment of the monitor and the monitor's conduct. They raised a couple of points about maybe the monitor didn't handle things as well as he should have. But by and large, they vindicated both the monitorship and Bromwich's behavior. And interestingly enough, the judge who wrote the decision is Dennis Jacobs, who was very pro-Apple, shall we say, in the appeal hearing on the larger ebook issue before the Second Circuit now. So even Judge Jacobs could sort of see through Apple's argument on this one. Don't think that bodes necessarily too well for Apple. But again, this is only a small piece of three appeals that are actually pending, or now two that are pending before the court.
Apple, to coin a phrase, is going to get a lot of bites on this apple, and they'll be back for much more. Andrew Albanese, we'll be back again next week with our discussion. Thank you for joining me here at Book Expo America.
It's my pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, the rights licensing experts at copyright.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.